Welcome to another episode of the David Mead Podcast. On today's episode, I have special guests with me, Melissa Spilstead. Melissa is the director of Hypnobirthing Australia, but how I see her is a mind coach for people dealing with the most intense pain in their lives, which is helping women with the birthing process. Melissa, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks, Dave. It's really great to be here.
Just, I want to give a little bit of context for listeners and viewers. We met in 2014 in the lead up to our firstborn child, Paxton. And we heard about you through our sister-in-law who did one of your online classes. And she had a great story after her first birth. And I wasn't into the whole birthing thing, but my wife, Tanil, was. And she said, I want to have the same story as what Jess did. I want to have a good story to tell people. So let's look into what the hypnobirthing is. We had no idea. And we did a few classes with you. Those classes certainly helped us get the outcome that we wanted, which was a good story to tell people from the moment Tanil got the waves, which is the word we use to replace contractions. From the moment she got the waves to Paxton coming out, it was good. There was a few moments in there that were a bit, how you going? But the most important thing on my side was I felt calm and zero panic throughout the whole process. I was so calm that on the way to the hospital, I even at 4 a.m., I just stopped at the red light. Tanil looked at me and goes, you serious? Run it. But that's what I got from the experience with you and a whole lot more. But now before we talk about that, can I ask where were you born and where you grew up and how you got interested in this field?
Well, I was born in Sydney, but I grew up on the Gold Coast. So we moved to the Gold Coast when I was only a little kid. And I've grown up on the Gold Coast and then university in Brisbane. So most of my life I've lived around here. And then what was the next question? I'm like a goldfish between one side and the next. I've forgotten the next question.
Yeah. Just the interest in the clinical hypnotherapy
and all that. Yeah, well, I'm just a born teacher. I used to subject my brothers. I have two brothers. I subjected them to school through the school holidays. I had a little blackboard and chalk and I would just, make them do sums and stuff like that. They couldn't even use the books on our bookshelf. They had to borrow them from me. I made my own library. So I'm like this born teacher. And I, after traveling and, having some fun through my 20s and that, and I knuckled down and studied at QUT here in Brisbane. And I also studied a drama degree at the same time because I've always loved drama. So I became a drama and English teacher. But I didn't last that long at it because I met my husband and next thing you know, I was pregnant. And then I've always loved children. I've always had an interest in childbirth. I actually wanted to be a midwife originally, but I kind of changed my mind along the way. And I then realized when we were preparing for our own birth that the childbirth education that was available was crap. Like, it was crap. And I couldn't believe it because I am a born educator. I take so much pride in this. And I just thought for one of the most important times in your life to be leading into it and to not receive adequate information, I just think it's criminal. And I could see why there was so much fear out there because people, when they were going to antenatal classes, if they even went, because a lot of people don't even want to go because a lot of them are crap. Terrible. Sorry to anyone out there who runs them, but unfortunately what's happened through the years is birth has become very medicalized, and birth is not a medical event. It can become a medical event, and when it does, we live in the best of times and we've got access to wonderful medical care should we need it. So we need to embrace that, embrace the time where we're living, but not forget the past, not forget all of our generations before us, our ancestors who have continued to give birth through all of these years, and they didn't have the epidurals and they didn't have the drugs and they didn't even have cesareans, they didn't have inductions. They would have midwives in a local village who would attend, and it was quieter, and it was community, and it was safe, and it was a portal to life. It was quite a spiritual thing. And that's how babies have come into the world for thousands and thousands of years. And yet now we have this situation where birth has become so medicalized that we have lost faith in ourselves. A lot of women have. So I saw childbirth education as being part of the solution. Yeah. Because once we're educated, once we gain faith in ourselves and our ability to birth again, and once our partners also know what an important part they are in the whole birth too, in helping us to stay calm, etc. And when we're not scared about going to the hospital, when we can actually just relax and we have our own tools and we can make informed decisions because we're really well prepared for birth, I saw that as being a very big part of the solution. So I just dedicated my career to childbirth education. I studied clinical hypnotherapy as well because I can really see how the hypnosis, I know it sounds a little bit weird, but you know it's not. It's mindfulness. It's focused attention.
Yep.
So incorporating that to help us to release fears and to prepare ourselves leading up to birth and also to use it during the intensity of birth, it's just awesome, along with other techniques too, breathing, et cetera. But, so that's been my journey.
When you talk about clinical hypnotherapy, could you explain a little bit more about that, so for those who don't understand? I understand to some degree.
Yeah.
You're sitting there, you're in a state of mind that's very relaxed, calm, and also a lot of other benefits come with that. Could you explain a bit more with that?
Yeah. Well, I had never used hypnosis until I learned it for the birth of our first child, and we have three children. So I actually was attracted to it because I had heard that you could use hypnosis for pain. And I don't know how you do what you do, David, because there's no way I would be on a footy field. I am such a chicken with pain. I am a real chicken. So like, I have fallen over, skinned my knee at a restaurant, very embarrassing, and I fainted and they called an ambulance because I skinned my knee. Can you imagine? So I have a really low pain threshold. So I thought, I had heard about this hypnosis helping women to stay calm during birth. I thought, oh, because everyone talks about, oh, birth is the most pain you ever experience in your life. If I faint over a skinned knee, how am I going to cope with childbirth? So I went and saw, well, my husband and I went and saw a hypnotherapist, and she just taught me these techniques for tuning out to all the distractions and tuning in to like really focused attention on what I needed to focus on. And oh my goodness, the power of that is amazing. And then I realized I'd actually been doing it my whole life anyway, because when I did my drama degree, when you get up on stage, you have to tune out to all distractions and you just have to tune into what you're doing on stage. So we do it in other times in our life when we're reading a book and we really get into it, or watching a movie, and you kind of zone out to everything else. And, you know, people might be calling out your name and you don't even answer them because you've got this focused attention. So that's what self-hypnosis is. It's focused attention. But I have learned, and this is what I do, I teach people how to get into that zone like that, right? So you just do it. Like, you just decide, and within seconds you just get into that zone. So you don't need this big lead up into it and all relaxation and all that. You can just go, right, I need to focus now. Boom. Mm-hmm. And I love that. And so that's why I used it. The other advantage of hypnosis is it actually taps into your subconscious. And our subconscious holds our belief system and our attitude. So if we have an attitude or a belief system which isn't so great, which isn't going to serve us well, like, for instance, if you went out onto to a game and you had a belief that your team wasn't going to win, right? So you're running onto the field, but your subconscious belief is saying, yeah, but we're not going to win tonight. Well, that actually affects your behavior, and it affects obviously your motivation. But your behavior, the way you react to things, that actually affects the outcome. And so your beliefs end up becoming a reality. So how hypnosis works is you tap into your subconscious, you get into a really relaxed, focused state, and then you put positive messages into your subconscious. And then you build it up so that your subconscious beliefs are positive and they're going to serve you well for what you want in life. And then you just go out and you naturally do it. Yep. You don't even have to try.
Yeah, because you know, sometimes when I'm running it, because a lot of the stuff you're saying, I can relate to it because it's not just playing rugby league, trying to do homework and you know, study and stuff like that. But in terms of rugby league, you do your preparation all week and then there's just this little voice. You can't quite work it out. It's like just creating that little bit of doubt. And then there are games when that doubt's gone and you go out and you just do what you do. But when that little voice or whatever it is kicks in, you're just like, you're trying to talk yourself out of that consciously, but it's still hanging around. Is that something to do with, has it got to do with that?
Absolutely. I've taught a number of elite sports people through the years for birth, right? But this, what I'm talking about, it applies, as you know, it applies to life. It applies to sport. It applies to study. It applies to parenting. It applies to just our attitude to life. So I remember a pro surfer who I taught, and he was pretty high up, and he talked about how he would use this form of self-hypnosis leading up to a major event, like a pro, you know. And he would visualize everything, like in great, great detail. He would visualize getting out of the van, pulling the board out, waxing the board, picking the board up under his arm, running down the shore, getting in the water, going through the waves, paddling out the back, wading out the back for the perfect wave. And then he would visualize riding this wave in. And he said that he knew when he was totally in the flow, is the word that he used, because it's like his visualization and what he'd prepared for in his mind became a reality. And he'd be out there and he'd be riding that wave in, and he couldn't tell the difference between what he visualized and what was. It just all melded together. It felt really, really natural. So, yeah, it's visualization is a very, very powerful tool for our lives.
Yeah, it is cool. I want to go a little bit deeper into the visualization stuff, because when I have applied that, and it's something I look back on my career and go, man, I wish I did more of this. Because when I actually did do that, no matter what the result was, I actually felt pretty good about myself performing on the field. And I speak to a few guys now and they say, like, who are big on that. They're like, yeah, if I do that, I just feel like I'm on top of the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in terms of like training and stuff too, if you wake up with a good attitude to go to training and you're like, all right, I'm going to do this, 10% of the stuff probably won't go your way. But if you hadn't done the visual work or the visualization, you probably don't train as good as what you could.
Absolutely. It's that whole mind-body connection. And sports realizes that. That's why you have sports psychologists, et cetera, on board. Because if you haven't got your mind in the game, if you haven't got the attitude, you might physically be very, very fit. But if your mind isn't in alignment with your body, then you're not ever going to achieve to your capacity, or even beyond your capacity, because it's amazing when you have belief, when you have really strong belief, how you're able to achieve even more than you even imagined that you could. And the goalposts keep changing too, because as you achieve a little, right, you know, think back to when you first started out, and some of those games that, you know, you scored tries and everything and you're like, you're the star, and they may have just been in high school or whatever, but you're feeling, oh, wow, like I can achieve this. And then it takes you to the next level and then you set the goalposts again and next level and next level. So imagine if we had the ability to leapfrog. Imagine if we had the power to actually visualize even further than just the next stage, what might be possible.
Yeah, for sure. That's one thing I noticed about guys, particularly at this level. They give a little bit of information about, you know, visualization and stuff. Maybe it's a secret tool that they like to keep to themselves. But guys who are mentally stronger, who mentally prepare themselves, far outlast guys who come in and out of first grade. That's one thing I've noticed throughout the 13 years that I've played. Certainly a very interesting field, and I think it's very underutilized, this type of skill, I guess you would call it.
Absolutely.
You can develop it.
Absolutely.
As an individual.
What you can conceive in your mind and believe you can achieve. That is a really famous saying. Through my life, I have set goals. As you know, we've discussed this ourselves. And just this week, I've achieved a lifelong goal. I'm by the beach. We bought our house by the beach. And it's just a shack. It doesn't matter. I'm there. We will build. We'll go up. But I have had a vision board for years. And I have been persistently working towards my goals. So that's in life as well, not just in a house. I can tell you the most amazing stories about visualizations.
Yeah.
It's actually nothing to do with Oh, it's kind of
share away.
Okay, yeah. All right. Well, because people always think, you know, friends or family, they've always thought, oh, you're a little bit alternative, Melissa.
I get that too.
Yeah, there you go. So anyway, I had a vision board in our house because I'd learnt about that for birth. I'd used a vision board for birth, visualising what I wanted to focus on. It worked really, really well. That's what I teach in the course. So I had a vision board for our life and I had different aspects up on the board for our health and for travel and business. And like just different, yeah. So the business side of it, I had a picture of myself because this is years ago and I thought I really want to get the business out there. I want more people to know about it. I know that I need the media on board here to spread the word. So I just downloaded a picture of Koshi interviewing someone on Sunrise. And then I cut out a picture of my face and I stuck it on the the person being interviewed. It's a bit embarrassing, isn't it? But
that's
so
awesome,
yeah, and I had that on my vision board. And it was there for a while, you know, maybe 6 months or so. And it's not like I stood there and looked at it and meditated over it every day, but it was, you know, it's just in the house, you kind of breeze past, you kind of look at it, it's like, yeah. And whenever I do vision boards, I want to feel good with whatever I've put on it. So I don't want to feel icky about it. It's like you walk past and give yourself a virtual high five, right? But anyway, I get this phone call. Oh, hello, this is Katie such and such from Sunrise. I'm wondering if you'd be able to come in for an interview. We're doing a thing on hypnobirthing. And at first I thought, this is a joke, right? Someone's seen my vision board. And then I thought, no, she sounds pretty legit. And then I said, I've been waiting for your call. And she said, oh, have you? Did someone tell you we were phoning? I didn't tell her. No, you've been on my vision board. But, yeah, it's like you conceive it. I had to conceive that. I had to go through that crazy, you know, little cutting out my picture and that. I conceived it and then through my visualization I came to a point where I believed it and then I achieved it. And since then I've made multiple appearances on Sunrise and Today Show and other, you know, major media throughout Australia because I really focused on you that would get the word out.
Yeah.
And now I'm on the David Mead podcast.
Yep. You put my picture on the wall and put your face next to it. But yeah, that's amazing though, isn't it? Because I think it's so relatable for me. My family's always, oh, you're weird talking about visualizing, you know.
And are you like the hippie in the family?
Yeah.
Is that me too?
Yeah. I am, yeah.
Yeah.
Not with bad intentions, just for a laugh.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh, come on, guys. You have to believe in your dreams if you want to. I'd do that speech with them and so they don't really take me too seriously. Yeah. But as a young kid, before I went to bed every night, I'd be just saying, I'm going to have a long career playing in the NRL. Most nights, you know, not every single night, but most nights. That's from maybe 9 year old. Because I used to watch the game on TV and just picture myself running on TV and being a part of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't really think about it until you have these types of conversations that it comes up and you're like, well, it actually does work. So, I love the whole visualization stuff. I think it's such a good tool to have in the pocket because also being patient with it, I think that's where probably, including myself, a lot of other people have just gone, oh, it doesn't work, just don't worry about it.
Yeah, they'll say a few affirmations or whatever, or they'll stick a vision board up for a month. And it's like, oh, but it didn't happen. It doesn't work, you know.
And that's been me too for some areas of my life. So I think if it's something that you make it so strong in your mind and they put it up on the wall, I think I like the picture idea. I'm going to start doing that too.
Yeah.
But it's an area that's, how can I say, if people do actually go down it, because you see it everywhere now on YouTube, you know, it's such a thing that's spoken about a lot now.
Yeah.
So hopefully that, you know, more people can utilize it and,
absolutely, for our whole lives. So you already know this because you did the Hypnobirthing Australia course, so you know how we approach birth, right?
Yep.
But this applies to life, and it's more than just visualizing. You've got to see it, you've got to hear it, you've got to say it, and you've got to feel it. They're the four components. So you saying that to yourself at night from when you're a little kid. And did you said that as you went to sleep too?
Just before bed.
That is the most powerful time. Mm. So the messages that we put into our subconscious at the end of the day, just before we go to sleep, they are really powerful. So I always make sure I'm not watching the news or anything like that before going to sleep or negativity. I always make sure that I'm thinking about positive things. So, but you were saying it to yourself, yeah? And I'm imagining that little David had lots of trophies and medals up in his room. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
so that's it. So you're this little kid, right? And you're going to sleep and you think, I'm going to have a long career in NRL. And then you're waking up and you've got your medals and your trophies and your posters and that around you.
Yeah. They're so all there.
Yeah. So you're seeing it, right? You're saying it, you're hearing it, and you're feeling it. So you attached emotion to it, and that's when you make your dreams a reality.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool just to bring it out to the front of the mind. Mm. Because a lot of other times as well, especially with the news and stuff, I find when I wake up in the morning and I've watched YouTube on my phone and fell asleep to it watching like aliens.
We're all guilty of that.
Aliens are, you know, whatever they're doing, you know, the war that's happening or, you know, a lot of the COVID stuff that's happening, it is feeling like tired. Even if you get your full 8 hours sleep, I wake up in the morning and go, man, I feel tired and fatigued because of, you know, what you've put in your mind before.
Because, it's then running. It's like you've opened a program on your computer and you've left it running overnight. You know when you do that, when you haven't shut down and you've just got all these different programs going and so your computer doesn't run properly.
Yeah.
Whereas if you shut everything down and you close it up and that fan gets to have a little rest, so I think of my mind like a computer.
Yeah.
And I also feel like that when I get overwhelmed, and through this whole the last couple of years, there's been plenty of times where we've all felt overwhelmed. And I just think, right, I've got too many programs open at the moment. I just need to shut down some programs and I'll just focus on one program at a time.
Yeah.
Yeah, as a coping mechanism.
Yeah, I like that. Have you got any stories of when people came to you real fearful of the whole, I'd imagine that you'd have a few.
Oh, I've got heaps.
The whole birthing
process,
and then they come and see you and the experience has actually been pretty good.
Oh, yeah. I
remember just before, sorry to cut you off, I remember Tennille and I watched a video. This was in one of our classes, private sessions that we had with you. You showed us a video of a woman giving birth, and she was just so calm. Eyes are shut, relaxed. She's just breathing. Baby had come out, and then we're sitting on. Next minute she turns around and just picks the baby up. We're like, what the? Was she giving birth that whole time?
Yeah.
But that was a normal.
That's normal. That and process. This is the thing, that's normal to me.
Yeah.
Right. And not all births are silent. And I can remember saying that to you at the time because for one of my births, I mooed my baby out. You know, sometimes we vocalize. But I've also had births like that birth that you saw.
Yeah.
Like I've had births like that, completely silent. The midwives thought I was a Scientologist because I was so quiet. No, I hypnobirthed it. Yeah, it's, I guess we're so conditioned. We are so programmed as a society to think of birth as the Hollywood drama that when that, and I guess this ties in with visualization, when that's what you see all the time, so you're seeing it on television, you're seeing it on YouTube or whatever, people are talking about it, and it, your anxiety levels just, they rise and rise and rise to the point I have taught many women through the years who have had tocophobia, which is an extreme case of fear of birth, to the point where they were just so distraught that they were even pregnant and had to get this baby out. So it's a really intense fear of birth. And that's where the hypnosis side really helps. But I don't think hypnosis is everything. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good tool, but it also needs to be with other tools and knowledge too. I think you need to I'm a very practical, despite being a hippie, according to my family, but I'm actually a very analytical and practical person. And so I like to research things and know my stuff, and I like to make informed decisions. And something that can actually increase a lot of fear in us leading up to birth is the fear of the unknown. So I think it's really important that we just bone up on childbirth and learn about what is actually happening in our body. Why are we feeling these sensations? Are these sensations even pain? Because normally when we feel pain in our lives, it's when we're hurt, we're injured, we're poisoned. Birth isn't you being poisoned. It's not you being injured. It's a normal bodily function. Why are we calling it pain? We can have a lot of very intense sensations in our life, very intense. Like you think of some of the games that you've played, like, you know, it's ideal you doing this and talking to you about this, because there are times where you have had to push through physical intensity, right? But were you, as you are running and making yourself go through the challenges, were you actually thinking, ow, oh, but this hurts so much, I can't do this because this hurts so much? What was going through your mind? What kept you going?
Normally your coach is there. He's watching you and you don't make the times and stuff. You've got to, you know, do all penalties and stuff. And you've got teammates there supporting you. So if, let's just say it's a 2 kilometer run, you've got to do the time as fast as you can. Your legs are like a burning sensation. That they feel heavy. Your lungs are exhausted. The self-talk is normally, oh, keep going, you can do this. Not all the time. Some of the time you're like, gee, this is hard. Mm-hmm. But when you say pain, I'm a little bit confused, because now it's making me think, was I actually in that much pain, or was it just
a bit of intensity?
Intensity, that's the right word for it.
Because your body is having a massive workout.
Yeah.
It's not injured. The burning that you're feeling,
yes,
you know, what is it, lactic acid or whatever. That's, like, yeah, that's it. It's not someone stabbing you in the leg.
No.
Right? And so we apply this to birth too. So when you're having your waves, your surges, contractions, whatever people choose to call them, they are the muscles, the uterine muscles, having the biggest workout of their lives, massive workout. So you're going to feel it. And you're going to feel it as your pelvis is opening up and the baby's coming out. You're going to feel it. But is it pain or is this a normal part of life that is intense, but it is actually what we're designed to do? Now, I'm going to be a bit controversial here, so I hope this is an 18-plus audience.
That's fine.
Okay. It's,
when I put it up on YouTube, it asked me, is it made for kids?
All right, this comment isn't.
I say it's not made for kids, so
no. That's fine. All right, so when we have the surges, waves, contractions, and our uterine muscles are like they're waving, right? That is actually what, like, our uterus has done that before. Hopefully it's done it many times before, because that's what the uterus does when it orgasms, right? So it's not like the uterus hasn't done this before. And you ask women, okay, when you orgasm, does it hurt? And I don't know many women who would say, you know, like, it's intense, you know, and I can't say it from the male perspective, obviously, but from the, but my husband tells me that it's intense from his perspective. But it's just this height of intensity of physical sensations that kind of meld together also with, like, I don't know, your mind and everything. It's this, yeah, it's a very hard thing to describe. That's actually what we're experiencing during birth. Our uterine muscles are actually doing that.
Yeah.
So if we can orgasm and not consider that to be pain, then we can actually go through labor also. And if we don't associate it as being pain, if we actually associate it as being the strong sensations of giving birth, you know, I'm not saying birth is a walk in the park. I'm not saying that at all. It does get very intense, you know, but I have actually done harder things in my life, like climbing the Ruwenzori's in Africa. Like, that was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life physically, whereas, and I didn't even quite make it. I nearly got there, but it was intense, right? But this, giving birth, very intense, and actually physically I was probably experiencing even more intense intensity than I did as I was struggling through the mud, through the Ruwenzori's, trying to get to the peak. I was probably in more physical intensity at that time. But because I had my mind in the right place, and because I didn't label it as being pain, like you on the footy field, not labeling it as pain, but labeling, you know, that this is normal, you can do it. And this is what I teach women. You can do it. There's plenty of women who have been there before you. If you think of the human race, we've survived through thousands, hundreds of thousands, whatever years. If we are so flawed physically that we can't give birth, then how has the human race continued and flourished through all these years?
Yeah, because a lot of our close networks, we've had a few friends who have come out with good stories, but a lot of the time it's just like, it was just a terrible experience.
Yeah, it's sad.
Yeah.
It breaks my heart when I hear of, there's so many people who have experienced traumatic births, and it breaks my heart because being a parent, as you're a parent, like, you know how important that time is. That's the time you first meet your baby. Those days and weeks and months afterwards when you've got your newborn baby and you're bonding with that baby, if mother feels whole, like, if she's been able to come through this experience, regardless of the special circumstances, because I know for Tennille, for your second birth, there were some very special circumstances there, like, gosh, but thankfully she had tools to be able to cope with what was going on around her. She focused on what was important and what was within her control. And so she came out whole rather than traumatized, as a lot of people could be very, very traumatized.
Yeah.
And that's what this is all about. It's about coming out whole, because then when we're not traumatized, then we can bond with our baby, with each other. We can enjoy this process. I just want to spread the love. Yeah. I want more parents to experience that.
Yeah, because to Neil's one, when you said she had the tools, I was actually in France when Coven was born here in Australia, 31 weeks, premature, obviously, and she just thought, she told me, man, if we didn't do Melissa's course, I don't know how I would have done this, because you're on the other side of the world. My family's here, but having you there is pretty important.
Yeah.
But she just said she was able to just be like, all right, just focus on this moment. And after Coven was born, he had to stay in the whole NICU for 6-8 weeks, I believe it was. And when I came back, we were in and out, but her attitude from that moment Coven came out was outstanding. So she certainly got some tools that were very useful, and I think it certainly made a difference than if we hadn't done the
It makes course. A positive difference for all types of births. Because I also saw a real injustice years ago when people who know that they need to have a cesarean birth, they had no tools either. So, gosh, that's pretty scary, going in for major abdominal surgery and not having any coping tools. People can be very, very scared going into that. So I wrote a course for cesarean birth too. I did that years ago, and it turned out being a world first. I didn't realize it at the time, because I just did what I saw needed to be done.
Yeah.
So the course is actually, we have a specific one for cesarean. We have, and then we have our positive birth program, which you did, which is for all types of births. And it's also like sometimes medical intervention is needed, and we're thankful for having medical intervention there, because, you know, look at your situation. It's actually, they did a wonderful job keeping your little boy safe and Tennille safe. So we just need to join the two together, like use medicine as that backup, and then but us feel empowered enough and have our own tools and have our mind in the right place, so that we're coming from a place of empowerment for our birth. There's this, you know, the whole fight or flight response. Everyone knows about fight or flight response, but something a lot of people don't realize about fight or flight is it's not just fight or flight. Do you want me to describe it? Okay, so this goes back to prehistoric, you know, like we're all in a cave and we're sitting around a cave cooking up a brontosaurus steak or whatever, and and next thing this saber-toothed tiger comes along, you know, and it wants to eat us, and it's like, okay, right, we have to get out of this situation fast. So what do? Do we fight it, right? Do we grab a club and fight it? Do we take flight? Like, do we run away? Do we freeze? Do we just like play dead and hope that it just walks over us? Or do we appease it, like throw it that brontosaurus steak? So that's the way we react when faced with a threat. But in this day and age, we're reacting in the same sort of way to threats 24/7, just about. Like, just turn on the news and you're going into that fight flight response time after time after time. We're not designed as humans to be going into this fight or flight response so often as we are now. So that's another advantage of these tools and being able to calm ourselves. So when we go into this fight, flight, freeze, appease response, blood is directed from any non-essential parts of our body, such as, you know, our uterus when you're giving birth, right? Digestive system. So that's why if you're feeling really nervous or scared or threatened, you turn off food, like you start feeling sick in the stomach. And some people even overcompensate and they eat because they feel such unease in their stomachs that they think that they're hungry. And so they're anxious and they overeat, you know, like we all react differently. So blood is directed to our arms to fight, to our legs to run, and directed away from non-essential parts of the body. So it's pretty bad for our whole body and our well-being to be in that fight or flight response on a regular basis. We really need to calm the farm.
Yeah.
But something a lot of people don't know also about this whole fight or flight response is our field of vision, like when we are feel under threat, and it can be to a real or perceived threat. So we can have this same reaction to something we perceive to be threatening, like a harsh word from someone. Like it doesn't have to be a saber tooth anymore. It can be anything. And what happens is our field of vision actually narrows. So we don't even see the full picture when we're in this fight or flight response. So if we want to be making good decisions in life, whether that be during childbirth, whether it be on the footy field, whether it be parenting, wherever, work, we actually need to be very mindful of this and to keep ourselves nice and calm and to reduce the incident of going into that fight or flight response, because our field of vision narrows, so we can't see the big picture anymore. And we make decisions based on get me away from this threat now. So we make short-term decisions. That's not good for long-term, is it?
Yeah, certainly not. And the food one is certainly one. I've found myself guilty of it. I'm lucky I get to train a lot, so I can burn it off. For a lot of other people that can, I'm sure that's the reason why we have a lot of these problems, because you're relying on it because you're trying to run away from or fight this emotional response.
That's it. And it's receiving. Yeah, because your digestive system, the blood's not getting there. So you're feeling dis-ease. Mm. And so you think if I have some McDonald's or whatever, I'll put some fat in my stomach, that'll stop this dis-ease. Yeah. But it just makes it worse, of course.
Yeah. You get hungry half an hour later and
that's it.
Go back for more.
But we're also making decisions too, which are short term, like going to Macca's and getting that Big Mac.
Yep.
We're not thinking long term. So I just think one of the best things that we can all do through these times, in childbirth, in everything, every aspect of our life, is reduce the number of times that we go into that response. And meditation, self-hypnosis skills, breathing, just breathing. Like the simplest, easiest way to calm yourself down is just to rest your tongue behind your front upper teeth. Do that now. We'll just do it now. Like this, it's so easy. And just allow your eyes to gently close. Don't force them shut. Don't hold them shut. Just allow them to gently meet. And now take a nice deep breath in through your nose. Drawing that breath in, slight pause, and then a long breath out through your nose. Release, relax. And now coming back to awareness. And you actually physically feel different just after one breath.
Yeah. That was what, 20 seconds? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel just that one exercise, breath. Yeah. Imagine 10, 20 minutes of that.
Yeah. Or even if you just did that at intervals through the day. If you only took 20 seconds or a minute at different intervals through the day, how beneficial that's going to be for your whole body.
Yeah. I remember that brought me back to a moment we had at your office there when Tennille and I came in. Just so relaxing.
Yeah.
Doing the hypnosis stuff. Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about the father's role in this whole process, the birthing process, because it's a pretty important one, I'd imagine. Yeah, I think I had no idea. I was interested because my kid's been born, but Tennille's, she's obviously the one feeling the sensations. She's going through the whole process. So I'm there for support. When we got to the hospital, I was just like, calm and zero panic or anything like that. No, I was just there with the midwife and we were both just having our quiet chat on the side while Tennille was doing her thing. And I don't know if that's the case for a lot of other people. I know a few of our friends have just recently had babies. They did your class as well, so they've got a good story there.
Right.
But I don't think that's the case for a lot of other guys. What would your advice be for?
I just feel so sorry for a lot of birth partners because they're not educated, so they don't know how important their role is and they don't know what to do and they just feel like a third wheel at the birth. So then they'll get on their phone, start scrolling or whatever, and then the birthing mother, rightly so, gets annoyed because it's like, what are you doing on your phone? But they don't know what to do.
Yeah.
So that's part of the course, is actually the birth partner's role and how important it is, because we women used to birth at home all the time. Women still do birth at home in lots of parts of the world, including Australia, but the majority, especially in Australia, the majority of women birth in hospitals now. And what do we normally associate with hospitals?
Pain.
Yeah.
Discomfort.
Yeah.
Illness.
Exactly.
Sickness.
Exactly. So there we are, and just one of the most beautiful moments of our life to go and give birth and bring forth life into the world. And we're going to a hospital where you normally go when you're sick. So it can increase anxiety, that's for sure. But if we have our partner there, it just makes everything so much better. It helps us to calm down. And we don't have a lot of continuity of care in this country with childbirth. Continuity of care is where you know your midwife and you have that same midwife all the way through. Now, we do have that, like it is available in some places, but the majority of women who birth in Australia don't have access to it. So since we don't know our midwife, we don't know the doctors, and we're birthing in a strange place where normally sick people hang out, like our partner and that calming voice and that familiar voice and even the familiar smell of them is just going to help us to calm down. And when we are calm, then we're not going into that fight or flight response. And remember, I talked before about that whole the fight or flight response and how blood's directed away from non-essential parts of the body. Well, the uterus is non-essential. It doesn't get you away from a saber tooth. So if a woman is anxious and scared during birth, the blood's going to direct away from her uterus and it's going to make labor a lot harder. It's actually going to create pain because these muscles, you imagine working any sort of muscles without breath, without breathing, without oxygenating them. Like you can't do it. You can't sustain it. So back to the birth partner. The birth partner helps us to stay focused and calm. So we as the birthing mother, we need to switch off our neocortex and just go into a primal mode and bring our baby into the world. A birth partner, their presence, their calm presence, and when they know, like when you know your role, it's easy, isn't it?
Yeah.
I reckon it's easier, the role as a hypnobirthing partner, than it would be not knowing anything.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And that is going to help the mother and the baby. So you're not helpless, you're not useless, you're not the third wheel during the birth. You're actually an integral part of the birth, and your presence and just your gentle encouragement, you don't really have to do that much. But that gentle encouragement is actually going to help to perhaps affect the outcome too.
Yeah. I remember just being in that room and all I felt was like, just be here and just relax. Enjoy the process. They're doing their thing, so just enjoy it. Okay, so talking about study, I know we spoke a little bit about footy birthing. I want to talk a little bit about studying because for me personally, sometimes it's a lot of hard work to actually go and sit down and study, and then when you're actually there, get distracted so easily.
Yeah.
You're trying your hardest to focus, but you're like, it's all right, I'll do it later.
Do you want a hack?
Yeah. That's where I'm going to, actually.
Yeah.
So with study, how do you study?
Okay, I'll tell you, because I am a little bit distractible too.
Yeah.
I've always been like this, you know. So it's harder for me to sit down for hours on end and study. I don't think it's natural, you know, for humans to do that. So let me tell you how I got through uni. Especially the subjects that I, the subjects that I'm not as into, like when I'm really into something, I can study and I don't have as much a problem. But when there's certain subjects or assessment, et cetera, that I'm not as much into, and I know that it's just ticking boxes, you know, it's just I have to get through this to get the whatever the qualification is, right? Okay, so what I do is I make my own revision. So I write out questions or I highlight particular notes that I know are going to be more likely to be in the exam, et cetera. And then I record myself saying it. So I read it all out. And another thing I do is I go through, normally in textbooks, there's a summary section at the end. So I would just read the summary section and record myself saying that. And I'd always go to the last lecture, because the lecturers are scared that they've left some stuff out. So they also really appreciate anyone who turns up to the last lecture. So they always give you some tips. So I would also incorporate some of the info I got in the last lecture. And then I would record it, and then I would play it back to myself at night as I slept.
Okay.
And your subconscious is taking it on. And then I would go into the exam the next day and blitz it.
I like that. I'll certainly be listening to that one again over this. I'll let you know how it go.
Yeah. Just record yourself. I think also making your own revision is a good idea too, because you're connecting with the learning.
Yep.
So you make your own revision, you record, you say it. So I guess you're seeing it, mm-hmm. you're saying it, you're speaking it. So, and you're hearing it, you're feeling it. You're doing it, like, it's pretty much the same as what we talked about, visualization, isn't it? This is a way of getting stuff in, making sure that it stays in there. But I used that for my drama degree. Sometimes you'd have to do someone would pull out of a play and it's like, oh great, you're Macbeth sort of thing, female Macbeth. Okay, you need to know all these Shakespearean lines by Friday. It's like, oh my gosh, how am I going to learn all of this? How am I going to retain this? I would just read the script and just play it over and over and over. Even when you're asleep, don't worry, because your subconscious is still taking on the messages even when you're asleep. You just put it on loop.
Okay. I like that one. It's the first time I've heard that one too.
It's a Melissa hack.
Yeah, I like that one. I'll try that out. As we get closer to the end of the podcast, I've got a few fun rapid-fire questions. Hopefully they're fun.
Have a glass of water first.
Answer them as short as you like, as long as you like. I say, here we go. What's your favorite birthing myth?
That you have to scream to give birth. It's my favorite one because it's so stupid.
Yep.
You don't have to scream at all. It can actually be really calm. I've even seen women laugh their babies into the world.
Yeah. That would be a sight to see,
yeah.
Especially with, you know, what you're used to seeing in the movies.
Yeah.
Seeing the opposite would be like, whoa.
I know, but I see the Hollywood in that, and it just annoys me because it's so unrealistic.
Yeah.
When you are part of birth, and I guess the births that I'm part of are hypnobirths, so I get to see people who are birthing like me. I don't attend that many births, but when I do, they're people who have approached their birth using the same preparation techniques that I have.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's just not like Hollywood.
It's a different normal for you then.
Yeah, totally different reality. Yeah.
This one might be different, but what's the craziest one you've ever heard of?
In regards to birth?
Yeah, the craziest myth.
Oh, gosh. I don't know. Okay. I hear stupid stuff all the time.
In terms of stupid stuff, what's the worst advice you've heard when it comes to birthing?
To hold your breath, because, and this is quite serious, right? But it's ridiculous where women have been coached to give birth. And giving birth, like the thing that I can, for anyone who hasn't given birth, if you want to know how it feels, right, it's actually like doing a big poo, right? A big poo. So don't everyone who's ever done a poo think, oh, I've given birth. But we have this natural expulsive reflex that actually moves the baby out. So women in comas have given birth. Our body expels the baby. we can work with it just like we do when we're emptying our bowels. We can work with it, but we have to wait for the sensation. We have to wait for the feeling. And then we take ourselves off to a private place and then we wait for it and then we work with it, you know, without going into too much detail. But that's what women need to do for birth too. They need a private place because it's a natural expulsive reflex. Not have a bunch of people standing around telling them to push and hold your breath. It's just cruel what's happened to women. And the evidence shows that it's actually detrimental to women and babies to birth like that. And yet that has, through history, become the norm in some places. Things are changing now, though.
Yeah. Mm. What's the best advice you've heard of that you've given?
Well, the birth is one day in your life, and it's really important that we prepare so that we can have a happy birthing day because it sets us up for life. But the best advice that I received, which I think made a massive impact, was my mum. And it was for having the baby. And I can remember those first days, it's getting to know you with your baby. And they can be challenging times, those first days. And everyone comes at you with advice. Did you get that? When you had the boys, like everyone who's ever had a baby is an expert, right?
Yep.
They all tell you how to parent, and there's so many different pieces of advice. And you're especially when it's your first, you're like kind of a kangaroo in the headlights sort of thing. You don't know, you've never done it before, so you're just being hit with all this information and advice. But my mum said to me, she said, "Melissa, you and Stephen are the experts of this baby. You are this baby's parents. You know this baby better than anyone on this earth. Like, this baby knows you better than anyone else." You think about it, the baby knows, for the birthing mother, they know our heartbeat. We know our babies better than anyone. And so for the pregnancy, birth, and beyond that through parenting, I want to pass on my mum's advice that parents, you are the expert in your children. Trust that.
Great advice. I love that one. I prefer that advice over all the other ones. What's your favorite type of music?
Jack Johnson. Oh, I love Jack Johnson.
If there's an animal that best describes Melissa Spielstedt, what would that animal be?
I think a squirrel. Yeah. I don't really know that much about squirrels, but they're kind of,
like fun.
They're quick and they're fun. Yeah. And they have a bit of fun and stuff and they just dart around. And that's a bit like me.
Yeah. What purchase have you made in the last 6 months with $100 or less has greatly improved your life?
That bottle of Maui.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Nice.
My husband and I celebrated getting our beach shack the other day. We pulled out the Moe. Yes, we spent a lot of money on it, but we poured those bubbles and we toasted each other. I love it when you reach goals.
Yeah.
It's an amazing feeling when you've been working towards something for many years and your visualization becomes a reality. And I think it's really important for us to celebrate those times. It's easy to kind of reach a goal and then onto the next thing. But I'm making a point now in my life of just savoring the moment for a bit. You don't want to get self-indulgent and be patting yourself on the back for the next 2 weeks sort of thing. Yeah. But, you know, like we've just moved in this week, so I'll stop patting myself on the back after this week. Yeah. But, yeah, celebrate our wins.
Yeah, nice. What advice would you give to a young, driven person looking to become a clinical hypnotherapist?
Well, I think you have to explore your motivation first for whatever you do in life, whether it's clinical hypnotherapy, whether it's an NRL career, whether it's film and television or, you know, marketing or architecture, whatever you decide to focus on in life. What's driving you? Because when you come from an authentic place and it is, it's almost instinctual and you really love what you do, like you live it, you love it, you think about it. It's not a chore. You don't have to work because you love it. then when you find something like that and when your motivation for doing it is to help others and to make the world a better place, you can't go wrong. So I wouldn't study clinical hypnotherapy for the title or anything if you don't have your heart in it. It's a pretty specific sort of area. But if it's something that you've maybe had experience with yourself and you know how transformational it can be, then you're coming from a really authentic place of wanting to help others. But like it's the same for anything. Like I said, any role that you play in life, when you're coming from that authentic place, you can't go wrong. You're going to make an impact.
Yeah,
as sure. You have in your career.
Yeah, I love what I do. So
yeah, you can tell. It's an honor, isn't it? When you find your groove and when you're living your dreams, it really is an honor.
It really is, yeah. I certainly love it. Do you have any final comments, recommendations before we wrap up? How can people find you and more about what you do?
Yes. Well, if you are – where's the camera? Okay, I'm going to look at you. If you're having a baby – please get yourself over to the hypnobirthingaustralia.com.au website and just have a little look around, read some birth stories, watch some videos, just have a look around. No pressure, but this can revolutionize your birth. I know that. So I really hope that the right people find it.
Thank you, Melissa. We'll certainly put those the information in the show notes as well, so people will be able to access it through the information on the link.
Great.
But I really appreciate you making the effort to come from the Gold Coast. I know you've just moved inside your new home, which is exciting. I'm grateful that you were able to leave that space for a little bit to come join us. But
My pleasure.
I'm looking forward to our little catch-up after this
with
Tennille and bringing up some more stories from, you know, our experience back in the day. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
If you've enjoyed this episode, then I'd love if you would hit that subscribe button, leave a comment or a review, and share it with anyone you think might enjoy it as well. For more behind the scenes content, head to my Instagram at davidmead411 and feel free to slide into my DMs if there's anyone you would love to hear from. I can't wait to bring you another episode next week, and thanks for listening to the David Mead Podcast. We'll be right back.